Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today, co-host Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good, and we're very lucky today. We have a special guest from the great D.C. area. No, he's really from Kentucky, the 4th District in Kentucky. Thomas Massey, it's great to have you with us in studio. This is a rare occasion for us.
I can't tell you how exciting it is to be here as a real person in your studio and not some disembodied head Skyping in.
Yeah, there you go. Now, I want to know, first off, are you a truly dedicated, professed Republican, or are you a plant?
You know what, Ron, I think I need to come out of the cloakroom today here and admit I'm a transpartisan. Now, what I mean is I can't really identify with either party some days, more and more so these days.
Well, I think you have a problem, because you identify with liberty. And you know, every once in a while, one party's okay on the issue, and every once in a while, the other party's okay. And most of the time, they're all over the place. But I know where you're coming from. And I think the day you walked into Congress, I walked out. Is that about right?
That's about right. We overlapped for a week or two.
Yeah, there you go. And but I am delighted that you're there. And every once in a while, you have taken a position where you were the only one in the whole Congress to vote. And I guess some people thought, I bet your people back at home, what's this guy doing? What is he doing? He's all by himself. Doesn't he want to get along?
Yeah, well, now after 4 years of being in Congress, they just assume I've read the bill and everybody else hasn't.
Yeah, there you go.
They see that I'm a no.
Yeah, well, it is really great, and there's some big events going on now, and you had a recent interview with CNN, and that, of course, the big event that we're dealing with today and yesterday is all of a sudden our government, without the permission of the U.S. Congress, decided to drop a few bombs on that territory called Syria. And it's caused some ramifications, and you were being interviewed on this. What is it that disturbs you about that? Is it only the fact that the Congress had nothing to say about it, or is there more to it than that?
Well, there are a lot of troubling things about it, but this is a movie that I've seen before, okay, in various forms. In 2013, you know, President Obama said that Assad had crossed a red line and there would be repercussions, but that he was going to go to Congress. He said, I could do this if I wanted on my own, but I'm going to check in with Congress. And when he checked in with Congress, the people melted our phone lines. I mean, they called up. We got 100 phone calls a day in my office for 7 days in a row. 99 were against going to war with Assad, and only one was for on average. Some days that person didn't call, and it was just 100-0. And so what ultimately happened is Congress never voted. They didn't vote for, they didn't vote against. They said, this is so unpopular, we're not even going to put anybody on the spot and hold a vote. And so then instead, Obama conducted a secret campaign, but funneling billions of dollars of weapons and cash to the to the radicals there in Syria. But this time, you know, Trump just skipped the whole constitutional aspect of it and just committed what I think is very clearly an act of war without coming to Congress.
Now, have your phones been ringing today in your Washington office or Kentucky office?
I expect they will. You know, we're just getting started today.
You don't know what the reaction has been.
On Twitter and Facebook, generally, there are a lot of people who supported Trump who are unhappy with him now, who feel like they were misled. You know, Hillary was running on an interventionist foreign policy, and Donald Trump ran on a non-interventionist foreign policy.
Yeah, it's amazing. Someone said this is the quickest 180 turnaround in history. It was less than a week ago that the White House said, you know, removing Assad is not really a priority for us. And of course, that panicked the neocons, John McCain. It panicked the rebels who they'd been supporting for so long. And then the Syria peace conference was supposed to start, and then all of a sudden a complete 180 is turned when, without any investigation or evidence, he starts lobbying 59 Tomahawk missiles, $1.5 million each is the cost. I wonder how the people of Kentucky feel about paying $100 million for a temper tantrum.
It doesn't sound like we're putting America first when we spend $150 million or $100 million, whatever it worked out to be, to bomb You know, we're not counting the cost of the aircraft or the destroyers or whatever launch these things that are offshore there. But it doesn't sound like we're putting America first to the people in Kentucky that see that money being spent over there. And today, ISIS is better off this morning, than they were yesterday.
That's right. And that is the real shame. You know, it was literally, but there are some people who argue that, we're against Assad, but we're not necessarily against those who want to throw Assad out, who happens to be the radicals, and that's, they seem to benefit. They are exerting themselves right now. They might come down as the victors, but there's also others who promote this type of foreign policy. I don't think it's bothering Saudi Arabia that we're doing this and a few others.
Well, there really is a proxy war going on here as well, which is another big danger. Apart from my constitutional concerns that the president has committed an act of war without coming to Congress, we are now in a tit for tat, I think, with Russia, which is not a good place to be. He started out his administration on at least neutral terms with Russia, and now we are back to being adversaries.
Yeah.
No, I think it would be difficult. I mean, they've tried so far to say that the authority from 2001 for the use of military force, they've stretched it and stretched it to include, okay, fighting ISIS in Syria. But this strike seems to me to be such a stretch. I mean, is there any way that you could stretch this to be covered by the 2001 authority?
Well, there's two outstanding AUMFs, right? There's the one that ostensibly allowed us to go into Iraq. They've stretched that now. That AUMF allowed us to attack the government of Iraq. Now they're using the same AUMF to defend the government of Iraq, right? And the same 180 has happened with this other AUMF to go after terrorists, Al-Qaeda and their associates. They're saying that ISIS is an associate of Al-Qaeda, so that AUMF allows us to go into other countries after ISIS. But the problem is now, if they're going to claim that AUMF, we're fighting ISIS's enemy.
Yeah.
So I don't think that AUMF, either of those AUMFs will cover it. Really, a declaration of war is the right thing if we're going to go to war. And I would love to see the DOJ, or Office of Legal Counsel, must have prepared something for Donald Trump to say, here is your legal fig leaf, if you will, when you do this. So let's give us a look at that legal document.
I mean, people were so attracted to candidate Trump who said, the Russians and Assad are fighting ISIS. What's the problem? Let them do it.
Yeah.
Thomas, we have the Freedom Caucus. You have chosen not to be in it, and I understand exactly why. But Freedom Caucus has some good people in it, and they try their darndest, and they're trying to sort things out. But where do they come down? Has the Freedom Caucus represented any foreign policy features? Would you go to the Freedom Caucus and say, hey, look, we want a little less intervention overseas, don't you understand? And look at all the failures, this sort of thing. Would they be open to that, or do you think they're just like most Republicans on foreign policy?
Well, I think they're probably going to be split on this, and I can't speak for them. They're all individuals. But the Freedom Caucus and I agree on fiscal issues a lot of times, and many times social issues. But on foreign policy, we still have the Liberty Caucus, which Justin Amash chairs, and I'm sure that the members of the Liberty Caucus, which is a much smaller group than the Freedom Caucus, will be against this authorization. And you know what I say, even John McCain, I would hope, Senator McCain would agree that we need Congress to weigh in on this, right? That the Senate and that the House should be voting on this. So regardless of what your foreign policy is, if you have sworn an oath to the Constitution, wouldn't you believe that the legislative branch should exert its constitutional duty?
You're being too logical. Well, I would hope.
That's the other thing. People accuse me of being ideological, and I say, no, I'm just being logical.
Well, I hope you're right, but we've sort of lost any hope along those lines, because one of the battles we have are what we call the neoconservatives, because their position is absolutely different than a constitutional position, because because, you know, war seems to be high on their agenda, and they have to have the bully pulpit, and they have to have war propaganda. And this is when, I think you've already mentioned it, they have to do this propagandizing like they did prior to the Iraq war. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to build up the enemy and who it is, and now it's Assad. But to me, it's amazing. You described so well how the Congress resisted and the people resisted. Yeah. Congress had backbone because the people didn't want it.
That's
so
right.
I hope we didn't have this tremendous setback, and I hope it isn't just because the parties have changed, you know?
Well, you know, I hear the argument that we need to do this quickly, that Congress would take too long to go to war. And my argument is that's why the founders put the declaration of war power within Congress and not the executive branch. The executive branch can be hot-headed and they could, you know, whoever the president is, they could do something on a dime. But if you're going to commit virtually everybody's sons and daughters, because we have a draft, if you're going to commit everybody to possibly losing their life, if you're going to get in a war, you need to have the people's house involved. You need to have the elected representatives involved in that decision. And frankly, I think it needs to be more than a majority, because everybody is lives are going to be at risk that serves in the military.
Well, you know, leading up to Iraq, they had to convince more people, and they spent a long time doing the convincing. But they were looking for weapons of mass destruction, gas was there, and it all turned out to be a lie, or misinformation, or whatever you want to call it. It didn't have it. And how about in 13? They said, you know, Assad had these poison gases. Well, it turned out that he really didn't. But that still has been in the news. People recite this over and over again, but they had never had proof of this. And this is the same way. Why don't they take your advice and say, hey, sit and think about it for a minute? Why do we have to decide this within 2 days, you know, or less than that?
There should be some fact-finding. I mean, the threshold for convicting somebody of murder is pretty high for a reason. And you should apply the same, threshold for truth and for facts when you decide to go to war, I think. Mm-hmm. And this is literally, this has only been in the news for 24 hours. I trust that the president has some good intelligence, but he should be sharing that with Congress, frankly.
Right.
Yeah, it's you know, talked about logic earlier, and it escapes me. You know, Assad, for better or for worse, has shown himself to be a real survivor over these past 5 years, 6 years of war, and he's shown himself to be pretty rational in that sense. I cannot figure out why people would say that as he was on the verge of defeating ISIS and al-Qaeda in his country, as he was on the verge of going to a peace conference and settling the political issue, as he finally got the green light from the U.S., okay, maybe you can stay in power, that he woke up that morning and said, you know what, I just want to gas some of my people. It just doesn't, I mean, he would have to be the most suicidal, literally, if you think about Gaddafi, the most suicidal person in history, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the other thing. You have to establish a motive when you're trying somebody. And I can't see what his motive would be. What good does it do him to draw the world's biggest superpower into a conflict that he is on the verge of winning?
And his two allies that really have saved him, Iran and Russia, if they find out that he actually did it, they're going to back off as well. So he's completely isolated himself.
Yeah. You know, one quick point. I've heard people, they're grasping for a legal argument for how Trump could do this. And one that I've heard a senator espouse is that there's a treaty on using gas, or against using gas. But is that how treaties work? Every party to the treaty can just declare war on another party in the treaty if they think they've violated the treaty?
That's a stretch a bit.
Yeah, I would think that the parties to that treaty would have to come together and agree before even sanctions or anything were administered, would have to agree on the facts.
Of course, a lot of this can be solved with a more constitutional oriented foreign policy of non-interventionism, which is the founders talked about, no entangling alliances, which is sort of the thing that the president in his campaign has related to. You know, why do we have to have NATO and different things? But it looks like we're going to be very interventionist and very much involved, and that's how we get into these messes. So I have a little trouble, having had a couple years in Washington.
In the swamp.
that we're not going to get you enough help soon to the Congress, but you're crucial to speak out on these issues, and that's why we think you're doing such a great job. But I think it ends like the Soviet system ended, not that I identify them as equal, but it ended because it was a failed system. Communism doesn't work. But I don't think what we're doing now, whether we're running up these debts for warmongering or whether it's to give everybody free health care and free medical, free education, all this, eventually empires end most often for economic reasons. They usually destroy the currency and they do these other things and they finally get the people aggravated enough. But I did want to ask you one question, what your experience is on this and where we stand on it. Because we have a lot of young people watching this program, and I still go to the campuses. Oh, you do too. Matter of fact, you're going to be
tomorrow
speaking
I'll be in Denver.
Yeah.
Young Americans for
and
Liberty.
I've always been encouraged when I go there. And that's a unique group. But what about in your district with young people? Do you find that they're very open to your positions? My guess would be that you probably have pretty solid support with young people, and not every young person between the age of 18 and 26 is a Bernie Sanders supporter.
Well, the great thing about young people is a lot of them question everything, right? They're still questioning. They haven't accepted, well, just because, right? And so when they look at our foreign policy, and a lot of these kids, they're now adults, grew up watching our failed political policies in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya. And now that they are now voting age, they can do something about it.
Yeah.
And they realize it's a very powerful thing that they have, the power to change political outcomes. So what I'm hoping, though, is, and one admonition I would have, is that don't give up. Don't become apathetic. And my concern is that a lot of people feel like Trump was going to come and drain the swamp and that he was going to change things. And if he fails to do that, I'm worried that things will swing back over in the Bernie Sanders direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that because people are still looking for that person who will change something. And don't give up on your principles just because you want change.
That's right.
So you're going to be plugged in. This is going to be in the news. It's going to be on the Hill this next week. What would you predict is going to happen with your colleagues after this event yesterday? What do you see playing out?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is Congress is now on a 2-week recess.
Oh.
And
that's convenient.
It actually, I think it is very convenient, because what's going to happen, a lot of them have town halls scheduled, and I believe they'll get an earful. People, even though maybe the president has turned on a dime with respect to his foreign policy, the people haven't, right? The people's views don't change just because we've got a different president or the president changed his mind. So 4 years ago, the calls were 100-1.
Yeah.
Don't get involved in Syria. Don't even do a missile strike. And for heaven's sakes, no boots on the ground. I think we're going to hear the same thing over the next 2 weeks. And hopefully people, the congressmen will come back to the swamp. They'll collect back in the swamp and say, you know what? Here's what I heard. And this ain't popular back home.
You know, Thomas, I've heard, a supposition that maybe this is another convenience that it happened when he was meeting with Xi, you know, China, and that maybe Korea is big on his mind because the threats have been pretty clear with Korea, and that might even be more significant or could escalate just as much as what's going on in Syria.
Well, if this goes poorly for the president in terms of popular opinion, and I know it's going to go poorly in terms of foreign policy, right? Things will devolve in Syria because of this. We've just made ISIS stronger by diminishing Assad. But my concern is if he does receive a boost of popular support because of this attack, it may encourage him to escalate things and, who knows, to attack North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be just a tremendous mistake.
Right.
Well, I hope that our viewers listen carefully to Mr. Massey, because he's so right. They can make a difference. They need to contact the representatives and give them an earful, politely give them an earful about this so that they know that they're not for it. So I think you're absolutely right. People say, oh, it doesn't make a difference. No, it does make a difference. I was on the receiving end of a lot of those calls, and I had to go in and tell Dr. Paul, we're getting a lot of calls on this, so absolutely.
I can tell you, the staffs are happy to put the phone calls to the message machine at 5 o'clock when something like this happens. And those phone calls are consequential.
Yes. And emails and everything, yeah. Yes.
But the most important thing you can do is actually not write a letter, and even the emails aren't as important as a phone call, yeah, because you're tying up our staff.
Yeah.
Real people are answering those phones, and then the congressman wonders why nothing's getting done, yeah, because then they tell him, well, they're all calling about this thing you did, Mr. Congressman, and they're not happy.
Yeah.
And it changes behavior.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah. When there's enough noise coming from the people, like the vote in 2013,
yeah,
they let us know, and you know that people weren't interested in going to war, and I think the timing is very, very interesting. I do want to thank you, Thomas. This has been great to have you here.
Let me just touch you to, wow, I can't do this when I'm in a studio somewhere being Skyped in.
Yeah,
this is
but
incredible.
You're doing such a great job. You
and
know,
I don't have
there.
Something stuck in my ear, and there's no delay.
And if for everybody we send up there, there will be an ally. Can you find about 10 more for us? Send them.
Well, my job is when you send them there, I'm going to try and keep them from becoming part of the swamp, because everybody goes there to drain the swamp, and the swamp drains them.
You're absolutely right. And we've had that experience, and that's one reason I really, really admire what you've been doing, because you went with principles, and you're sticking with them, and there's not too many that do that.
Thanks, Ron.
I want to thank Thomas as well for being with us today, but really I want to thank our viewers for tuning in today. To me, this is an important issue. It's going to be around, and please come back to the Liberty Report soon.